from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to the Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll chat with the Madam Walker Theater's new Director of Marketing and Programs, Molly Jeffers.
I'll talk with Kathleen Stevens about her new gallery in Carmel's Art and Design District and a show of photographs all taken with an iPhone.
And then I'll meet the creative crew behind the new movie, Paradise Recovered. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The historic Madam Walker Theater Center recently hired Melina Simone Jeffers as Director of Marketing Programs. Jeffers, an Indianapolis native, studied both advertising and fine art at Ball State University before a career at Emmis Communications and then at the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Travis DiNicola spoke with Molly about what's new at the Madam Walker.
Molly, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And congratulations on being at Madam Walker. I know you've been there for, since about the summer, right?
Yeah, I think I started late July.
Okay. And there have been lots of changes going on, which is part of why I wanted to catch up with you to see what's going on at Madam Walker. Where do we start? You tell me.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think the Madam Walker Theater Center was without a full-time staff or a president for about a year until April of this year. When the board hired Dr. Terry Witt Bailey, and so she began taking a running start in April. She comes from Muncie. She was born in Chicago and has been at Ball State and then ran Cornerstone Center for the Arts in Muncie, and then started at the Walker back in April. A couple months later, she hired me as the Director of Marketing and Programs, and then 2 weeks later hired the third full-time staffer, who is Sherry Brown Webster, as the Director of Rentals and Events. So all of the full-time staff at the Walker is new, and none of us have been there for more than, 8 months now. So it's new. Like I said, we've hit the ground running. There's a lot of stuff that we have to do. There's a lot of stuff that we have to learn. So we're just, getting in there and just and moving and pushing and trying to make it, relevant and popping again.
Well, and certainly continuing on a great tradition of, just a beautiful space and always very cool programs that go on down there. But I know you've got some new things that are starting up, as well as continuing some previous things like Laughing on the Avenue and stuff you guys are still doing. But tell me about some of the other programs that you've got planned.
Sure. Well, since Dr. Terry has been there, we have come up with 15 programs.
All right.
So these will kind of be the Walker signature programs that will happen every year. Some of the new ones we're starting, one's called Flicks at the Walker, and we're going to start showing movies again in the spring. And lots of times when we talk
that's
to...
That's cool, because it was originally a movie theater.
It was, yeah. It was, and that's what I hear the most when people come in the building, especially some of the seniors that come in and say, boy, I used to go to the movies here.
Yeah.
And there was 25-cent Tuesday, and 5-cent Wednesday, and we hear that so much. And, when we go in there and we, turn the lights down, we're like, this is a cool space for movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so... we're working with people and, trying to figure out what type of reel we have and what kind of movies we can show. So starting this spring, we're going to have Flicks at the Walker and have movie nights and date nights and stuff like that.
Cool.
Jazz on the Avenue and Laughing on the Avenue are programs that have been there for a while and that are going strong. And so we're continuing those. We've started Zumba classes every Monday. A lot of people are coming to that. Kwanzaa Bazaar we've started, and that's going to be December 10th. The Martin Luther King celebration will continue. We're starting a Praise at the Walker type event, which is quarterly, like a gospel type event. We're starting a poetry concept. It's going to be every Sunday called Blue Moon Sundays.
Hmm.
Yeah, it used to be here 5-6 years ago. It's like a big poetry event down on Pennsylvania, but I think the restaurant closed, and some of the promoters that used to run it are like, we got to do it again at the Walker. And so we're bringing
it's sort of like an open poetry.
Yeah,
type,
open
know.
Mic,
yeah.
Involve some of the students at IUPUI, bring some artists in, have a live band, and really do the whole, jazzy, funky open mic type thing every Sunday. So that will also start in January.
Great.
We'll also start art exhibitions in January. So look for a lot of changes in January, but we have a lot of exciting things coming up, and we're excited to be celebrating the arts on the Avenue.
You guys have, it's not just the main theater space. You've got some really interesting spaces in there as well that I know you can you can utilize. Tell me a bit about the spaces available there.
Well, the theater seats 943 people. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's for rent on our first floor. There's a ballroom on the fourth floor that can hold 350 people, and that's actually rented more than the theater because it's available for receptions, holiday parties, you know, seminars, presentations, kind of anything.
Right, and you guys are still doing all of that.
Oh yeah. It's mm-hmm. there are people renting it all the time. So there's the ballroom, we've got a boardroom, and we've got a conference center. So there are four rentable spaces in the Madam Walker Theater Center. So it is a center. It's inclusive of a lot of things, and I think people forget that and really focus on the theater.
Yeah. Now, are there some other like touring shows you guys are planning on bringing in at this point, or still sort of trying to figure out the whole schedule as far as how it all plays out?
As we're getting in there, we're trying to figure out what's most necessary for right now and what mm-hmm. makes sense for Indianapolis and what makes sense for this kind of reinvention and making the whole place relevant again. So we're sticking with local programming right now and thinking about some regional acts that we can bring in within the coming months and in 2011. And okay. So we definitely have some national programming in mind, but just mm-hmm. at the moment we're focusing on regional acts and local acts.
Do you guys, find a lot more students, like from IUPUI or from, people over at Wishart or, coming over and sort of, there seems like there's a lot more going on that, mm-hmm. Part of, the Avenue over there where you guys are located now.
Yeah, we're like desperate for the IUPUI students to come over. Mm-hmm. I actually went to an open mic that they were having a couple weeks ago and just talked to the kids. I was like, guys, we want to be your friend again. We're neighbors. We're on your campus. Like, you have to come over. And it worked. And actually, one of their students, Will Watson, that goes to Heron, he's an art student, actually came and painted a mural on our garage on October 23rd and just finished it. It's very, very cool. And so that's just part of what we're trying to do is, get people involved, mm-hmm. get people coming back in the building and letting students know that this is your space, too.
Yeah.
Come and use it. They had a pageant in there 2 weeks ago. And so they are starting to use the space and just become more familiar with it and realize its history and that they can use it and that it's, right there on their campus.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, for people who may not be aware of the history, I mean, it was a theater that was built by Madam C.J. Walker. My understanding is that she actually died before it was finished.
She did.
Yeah.
It was actually realized in 1927. I think that was 8 years after she'd passed. Mm-hmm. And so her daughter finished it. And one of the cool things that I like about it is that during her time, a lot of people, or herself, she couldn't go to the theater mm-hmm. because she was black, or she would be charged more. And so she said, well, I'll build my own.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. And so that's just one of the cool facts that I like about it. But yeah, it was realized after her passing.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about that recently. There's been a great book of sort of the history of Indianapolis theaters that was published. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of discussion there about the Madam C.J. Walker Theater and how it came to be. Are there some challenges with running a theater that's as old as it is? I mean, it's got some beautiful architecture, but
it's got beautiful architecture, lots of original colors. It's a beautiful, beautiful space, but it's very old.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so, yes, there's a lot of upkeep, and I think a lot of people know about the air conditioning system. It costs so much just to have that old thing, mm-hmm. working again. And so, yeah, it's an old building. It's a beautiful building, but there's a lot of upkeep and a lot of things like our movie reel that, were only used in its heyday, like in the 70s. And some people don't know how to work on them anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, we find that one person and, keep the antiques, or we, do a big U-Haul and get everything new. And so that's what we're dealing with right now.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, now certainly as more programs come to light, the movies and everything else, people can check out the website and get information. I saw that you're starting up your email newsletter again with updates as far as what's going on at Madam Walker, which is great.
Yes, check out our site too. We did a whole big 24-hour web project with mm-hmm. Smallbox Web Design, which was awesome. We stayed up for 24 hours straight in our theater, invited people to spend the night with us. As Smallbox just completely redid our site, and it's awesome now. And we love them for it.
Well, very cool. Well, Molly, real pleasure getting to know you and to have you in here talking about Madam Walker Theater, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting us.
Travis DiNicola with Molly Jeffers from the Madam Walker Theater Center. For more information about what's going on at the Madam Walker, visit walkertheater.com, Walker, TheatreCom. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Kathleen O'Neill Stevens is a working artist who loves repurposing vintage items into mixed-media works. At her new Renaissance Fine Art and Design Gallery, which opened last spring in Carmel's Art and Design District, Kathleen has just opened two exhibits by friends she met and instantly knew had shared worldviews. The exhibits feature works by Barbara Miriam Ventura and Harry Sandler. Harry was in town to hang his show and dropped in with Kathleen to visit with Sharon Gamble.
Kathleen, I know that your current gallery is fairly new. How do you choose what to show, whom to show, what kinds of pieces to show?
The location I'm in now, I've been there since May. I used to be on East Carmel Drive. I still have a studio down at the Stutz. But how I choose is I choose work that speaks to me, because I think that it's a lot easier for me to show work that speaks to me, to clients.
Your own work, you're inexorably drawn to vintage items of all kinds, things that have lived a little life.
Yes.
And Harry's exhibit, I'm not sure you could get newer technology. That's an interesting juxtaposition, your sensibility with contemporary technology.
Well, once people see Harry's work, Harry does a lot of beautiful work. He also does oil paintings. Right now, this exhibit is going to be entirely iPhone. And when you see his images, you're going to see it's new technology, but he actually has shown me that you can paint with a camera. And his work has a nostalgic appeal. It's just gorgeous. It just draws you in, and I think it fits in very nicely in the gallery.
Harry, I know you've, without revealing your age, you're old enough to have worked with a more traditional camera. How did you move on or evolve into using the iPhone?
I got to the pinnacle of high-resolution cameras, and I felt that all the images that I made just looked like everybody else's.
Hmm.
And I was technically proficient in a lot of things having to do with photography, but still couldn't get back to my painting roots. And what the iPhone came along and did for me was to take some of that technical part out of taking the photograph and allow me to blend my photography with my painting, with no real line of demarcation anymore.
Hmm.
So it all became part of the same visual treatment, statement.
So effectively, the traditional cameras or digital cameras you were using became almost too complicated for what you wanted to do?
Correct.
Isn't that a little bit of irony?
Well, I have a background in platinum printing, which is a process from the 1860s, where you actually paint your emulsion on, and I was a platinum printer, and I got caught up in the digital revolution, and I think I took it a bit too far, and I lost myself in there, and the iPhone took me back to the Polaroid camera my father gave me when I was 6 years old.
I got to go to the Eastman House, George Eastman House and Museum for the first time this summer, and it struck me, one of the things he said was when he first explored photography, you didn't so much take a camera with you as accompany a truck full of equipment. You know, you had to take a tent, you had to take all these vats of chemicals and so forth. And so what Eastman did was to revolutionize that. And what you're carrying around with an iPhone is kind of the ultimate evolution of that. you can, it's lightweight, you can capture images without having to plan ahead.
The best camera you have is the one that's with you. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But the question's a good one because it's absolutely true. It's not a lot. You don't need a lot to take the photograph. And the technical part that's great is you can actually make really nice photographs that you can move in any direction. It's not like the point and shoots that are out there or some of the other plastic cameras, which, by the way, are kind of cool also. Mm-hmm. This one gives you a little more latitude to live in both worlds, technical and non-technical at the same time.
So walk us through this step by step. You're somewhere, and you travel a lot. You've worn many hats in your career, and it seems to me that they're all viewed through a visual artist lens as a manager of acts. You're dealing with image. You're dealing with, you know, what arena will we put this act in that will suit it best. Film producer, video producer. But take us through step by step. So you're someplace, you're traveling, you are suddenly struck by something, you snap the shot. Is there, you upload it and there's a lot of Photoshop work, or what happens next?
Actually, everything's done in the iPhone.
Really?
Yeah, there are many different applications out today that help you make your creations right inside the phone. The only time it really leaves the phone is when you have to make a print, because you can't print with any quality from the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So you take it out, you bring it over to your computer, and you sharpen it a bit because you have to, and then you make a print. But all of the grunt work, so to speak, is done right inside the phone, or now inside the iPad, which is just a bigger version of the same image.
Are there any disadvantages to working on a smaller format like that?
Failing eyesight.
That is exactly what drove me to ask the question. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I'd be squinting very quickly.
I have a two-time optical lens that flips down on my glasses, and I can see perfectly. And you have a little a pen that they make that you can draw and paint things in, it's kind of like you're in Photoshop, but you're on the iPhone with different applications.
At what point is it not photography anymore?
At what point is it not photography? It's always photography. Ansel Adams manipulated his images. He had a bunch of lights in a dark room, and he turned some on and off to make different things happen. So it's always photography. When is painting not painting? When they do collage work and they mix in.
Kathleen's the perfect person to know about the answer to that, because you manipulate all kinds of media.
Yes, and I'm nodding the whole time Harry's talking. No one can see.
You know
that,
what I go back to? When Dylan went electric, everybody was in an uproar because that can't be. He can't play an electric guitar.
Spoil everything.
And was it music, or was it because he played an electric guitar? It's the same thing. It's the same. Every time there's some new movement in the technical world, and somebody moves on, then they're giving up something. They're just moving on. They're just growing.
Yeah.
I mean, John Mellencamp, who I worked for 30 years, just made a record with one microphone in the middle of a room, just like they made records 50 years
ago.
In
the 50s, yeah.
He made a mono record.
And there are still some of the finest recordings ever made were made in the 1950s.
Yeah.
We'll talk vinyl in another interview.
Yeah, but that's what it's just another tool that an artist, you know,
and it's wonderful.
Can use.
What kind of, I had a chance, you were kind enough to bring a book of some of your images. They're very romantic, big R, lowercase R, all the kinds of romantic that you can imagine, almost impressionist.
Yes, they are.
What are there parameters when you're looking for a shot? Is there something that in particular that if somebody didn't know a piece was by you, they could walk into a studio and say, that's one of Harry's, that's his aesthetic? How would you define your own aesthetic?
I think Kathleen has to answer that. I don't think I'm capable of answering that. I like timeless imagery.
Timeless is a good word.
Yeah, timeless.
It is timeless, and it is very romantic. You are right with that. It's elegant. It has an elegance to it, and I think I would always be able to pick out one of Harry's images with the work that I've seen him do. I've watched him go with through the iPhones. How many iPhones? 4 iPhones now. And he can do different things with the different iPhones because the applications are different. But Harry taught me. I knew that he was an oil painter, and he taught me that he could, that a person can paint with a camera. That was very new to me, and it's from his heart, it's from his soul, and it is all truly his own work. If you handed 20 people 20 iPhones with all the same applications, you would get something different from each person. It's no different than your box of paint, different colors, or say with the mosaic, different China pieces, or any different medium. It's what you see there is truly Harry. It's from his heart.
It's not the tools, it's the artist that makes the
image. It's nice to have all these different tools, but it is the artist. At the end of the day, it's the artist.
I think what comes to mind for me is a visual diary.
Yes.
I mean, all of the images that I make and everything that all the paintings I do, and everything is always very personal in nature. Whether it's childhood imagery or what's going on in my life today. And I think that's how I would describe my work. That's the connection between one piece and another.
Do you still pick up a paintbrush occasionally?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
How do you know whether the particular image you want to capture is through photography or through paint? Does it just matter where you are, or?
Well, the great thing about the iPhone is in the old days, if you wanted to paint something, you'd go out and you'd sketch it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just now make a photograph in your iPhone, which goes back to the visual day pages or diary kind of situation, and then you can decide later on. Some of the images just feel like a painting, and so you put that aside to paint with, and other images are absolutely photographs, and some are both. I mean, it's a visceral thing,
yes,
that goes on that I'm not sure that I can explain.
It just happens.
Yeah, it's an emotional reaction to something that you see.
Like any artist that has several different mediums, your heart moves you toward one, any given one at any certain time. And Harry's work, it inspires me to want to paint more, because when I see his images, it inspires, with my different mediums that I use, he inspires me to want to paint more. And his work inspires a lot of different people in a lot of different directions. But it's... he is truly gifted, and I'm very proud to have. It is the first show that I've had in this new location, and I'm very proud that Harry's work is there as well as Barbara's work.
Is there anything you haven't done with an iPhone that you want to do still?
I have some ideas, you know. some new ideas. As they come out with more and more applications, I kind of write down notes about things I'd like to try when the time is right. What I don't want to do is turn the iPhone into a high-resolution, run-of-the-mill camera, because I believe it has a personality, and the personality of the camera is what I'm attracted to, and it fits me. And there are some who would go, well, can't you make it better this way or that way? And I'm always like, it is what it is. It's just, it's that's the tool. A fork is a fork, and a knife is a knife. And no matter what you do to it, it's still a knife and a fork. You know?
Does Apple know about you?
Actually, I've tried. They're very much not interested.
Mm.
And it's not... Their
loss.
Yeah. I don't understand why they're not interested, but maybe they're after a more commercial, you know, pictures of the kids on Sunday market.
Mm.
But there are. I'm not the only one. There are two or three others that, and we're all friends. We've become friends because of this, that are pushing the limits of iPhone photography in different directions.
Sharon Gamble with Harry Sandler and Kathleen O'Neill Stevens. You can see Harry's iPhone exhibit, Illusions of Reality, at Kathleen's Renaissance Fine Art and Design Gallery through New Year's Eve, along with works by their mutual friend Barbara Miriam Ventura.
Find out more at renaissancefineartanddesign.com. Again, renaissancefineartanddesign.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know what? I know that big Thanksgiving holiday is coming up, but we have a lot of events for mm-hmm. people to do besides cooking and eating.
On that calendar that we call,
what do we do?
Oh, come on. You want to do the turkey one? There you go. Nice. Very well done. Well, if you're looking for something a little bit less domestic and perhaps with an international flair,
where
then
are you going with this?
Check out the Indy International Festival, which is going on at the State Fairgrounds this weekend. And it features tons and tons of different arts and cultural organizations and ethnic food. And it goes on all weekend long through Sunday, all day Saturday, Sunday. You can get tickets at the door. There's international wine and beer there, Sharon. It's a lot of fun, as well as Taiko Drummers and Dora the Explorer and gosh knows what else, West Pavilion at the State Fairgrounds.
Very cool. Hey, local glass artist Susan Vogt is having a glass open house at her home, 947 North Highland Avenue, from 11 to 6 this Saturday. That's November 20th. So if you're listening on Saturday afternoon, you better get organized because this is only going till 6. She'll have snacks and beverages and a show of her beautiful glassworks, including a lot of jewelry. So if you're doing a little shopping for yourself or for others, there's a good place to start.
There you go.
947 North Highland Avenue.
Some great work.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, a lot of people are always trying to figure out, what do you do on the night before Thanksgiving?
Order pizza.
Right. It's like the busiest pizza night
out
here. But here's another option for you. You could have pizza afterwards. The Warren Performing Arts Center out on East 16th Street is presenting a free silent film classic, Laurel and Hardy, in two tars, and it has live music accompaniment, and it is it's actually taking place at 4 p.m., so not really in the evening, but 4 p.m. on Wednesday the 24th, right before Thanksgiving. It's really a golden age classic, Laurel and Hardy, fun film. You need to call the box office to make reservations. It is free, but you need to give them a call, 532-6260, out at the Warren, to check out Laurel and Hardy.
And see it on a bigger screen.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I have not one but two concert choices at the Athenaeum this weekend. They are Saturday night at 8, electric violinist Drew Tredick will join the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra in a concert that will feature favorite songs from well-known movies, including Godfather, Ghost, Wizard of Oz, What a Wonderful World, Mission Impossible, and many more. That's at 8 at the Athenaeum Theater, the ICO, that's Saturday night, this Saturday night, the 20th. Or Sunday afternoon at 3, also at the Athenaeum Theater.
This has a great title. I know what you're
about
to say.
I know, Psychiatric Intrigue. Orsina Smith is conducting the Indianapolis Philharmonic.
Is one of the pieces really called Chant for the Killing of a Snake?
Well, yes, it
okay.
is. And it is fabulous. That's the Revueltas piece. And Sensamaya is sensual and thrilling and stunning. So if you've never heard it live, you should go. Also on the program, the Rhenish Symphony No. 3 by Robert Schumann and some German folk favorites. And that's Sunday afternoon, the 21st at 3 at the Athenaeum Theater.
That should
Lots
be a lot of fun.
This weekend.
That
yeah.
sounds more like Halloween than
it kinda does.
Thanksgiving, but still very cool. At the White Rabbit Cabaret down in Fountain Square, 8 p.m. on Saturday night, a choreographer's showcase featuring the Modus Dance Company. Six choreographers are showcasing six of their pieces, 8 p.m. at White Rabbit in Fountain Square.
On this Friday night, just a reminder that the Frank and Katrina Basile gift shop at the Indianapolis Arts Center is having its grand reopening. So if you can't get to it this Friday night, the 19th, then just be aware that it's bigger and has even more cool stuff in it, a lot of it by local artists. Also, the Arts Center is doing a holiday party on Friday, December 10th from 5 to 9 in conjunction with opening night for several exhibitions. All of that's going on at the Indianapolis Arts Center.
Sounds great. Sharon, if you saw some artists perhaps this week working on Interstate 70 and were thinking, oh no, they're going to close
I
it down
did.
Again and make more art, well, you know, it's actually part of a project called A Greener Welcome, which is continuing what was started with KIB and Lily and all that. And this is some students from the Heron School of Art and Design have been installing two sort of art sculptural pieces at different interchanges along Interstate 70. And that's what's been going on. Jason Board has been working on a piece, as well as Shi Fen Lu. And in fact, later on, at some point, we'll be talking with both those artists about it. But it's really cool. There's just some neat work. So that they were supposed to be out there.
Okay. They weren't tagging surreptitiously.
No.
Good to know. Hey, I know how much of a train guy you are, and I have an opportunity for you at the Benjamin Harrison home. There's a model train.
There's trains everywhere.
HO scale model train exhibit and scenes representing the southwest portion of Benjamin Harrison's 10,000-mile cross-country train excursion in 1891. And the Indiana Railroad Company is one of the sponsors of this. So very authentic. Just opened and remains open through December 30th. So
very cool.
Make tracks.
Nice.
And you'll hear more about trains next week.
Your
right.
interview with the Idle Jorts new
right.
train show. That'll be really fun.
Jingle rails. Yep.
More things to be thankful for.
Next week on our calendar, we call
What'll We Do? I was waiting for a gobble, Cheryl. Nice.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Paradise Recovered is a new feature-length film shot in Texas and in Bloomington, Indiana. It had its premiere here at the Heartland Film Festival last month and opens in L.A. later this month. Travis DiNicola spoke with writer and producer Andy Redwine in our studio, and they were joined by phone by director and producer Storm Wood.
Andy, Storm, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, now, Storm, you're actually in Oklahoma, right?
I am. I'm in Oklahoma City.
Okay. Well, and Andy's here in our studio. Maybe the appropriate question is sort of, you know, since you guys are not together now, how did you get together in the first place? Andy, you're the writer and producer of Paradise Recovered. Storm, producer and director. What brought you guys together to do this project?
Well, I wrote the script. As any movie starts, it starts with a script. And so after I had a script for Paradise, I went back to Austin. I had actually lived in Austin for about 4 or 5 years, and Storm and I had met at church, actually, a church that we both went to. And he was the media director there. And mm-hmm. so we, you know, I kind of worked with him on a couple of projects, and we had a lot of friends in common. And I knew that he did film, and he's just, you know, a good person.
So you were looking for a director?
I was kind of looking for somebody to check the script and make sure it was something that was, you know, decent or shootable, or, you know, I didn't know. But he was somebody that I trusted. So I thought, well, you know, I'll pitch him the script and see what happens. And so we ended up, I went back to Austin for a little bit to visit family and friends. And he and I had breakfast together. And, you know, he told me that he really liked the script. And I'll let him take it from here.
Hey, Storm?
Yeah. Yeah, just it started off, you know, I just got a call from Andy, or was it an email? Either way, just saying she had a script she was working on and could I meet her for breakfast. And, you know, anytime any kind of story, movie is involved, and I'm definitely interested. So,
had you done
at a cool place in Austin called Kirby Lane, kind of an institution there, and we had about a 3-hour breakfast, I think, just talking about this idea that she had and this script that she had, and you know, from there I was going to read it and you know, give her feedback. And I loved it so much that I just wanted to be involved in the project and, you know, let her know I'd do whatever, but that I did want to direct, but I would just be happy to be involved. And
now, certainly you had done other directing before, but is this your first full-length film, feature-length film?
Yes, it's my first full-length featured as a director. I've worked on other feature films as a crew person,
mm-hmm.
and then I've done, you know, dozens, maybe even in the hundreds of short films and videos that I've, you know, written, directed, shot, different, you know, edited different jobs on those. So
I would imagine, you know, I mean, as you're working on all those other projects, the idea, though, of taking on a feature-length film is sort of what you're always working towards, isn't it?
Yes, that's been my dream for about 10 years now. So I feel really fortunate that Andy helped that dream, you know, become a reality. So,
Andy, tell me a bit about the story that the that you've written here for Paradise Recovered. Give me some background on what inspired you to want to write this story.
Well, it's about a young woman who leaves a fundamentalist cult group, mm-hmm. and she moves in with these two kind of slacker hippie types.
She meets them at a health food store.
She meets them at a health food store, and she gets a job there. It's interesting. I actually grew up in a group that was not dissimilar, but mm-hmm. not complete. I mean, obviously fictitious and not the same. And I left when I was 18, and I left with the help of some really good friends. And what was interesting to me was, you know, I wouldn't have been, I don't think I would have been able to leave had I not had the support of these great friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the past, I don't know, for the past, you know, gosh, it's been almost 20 years. I've been, you know, running into people who've been coming out of groups that are similar to mine, or even though the practices are very different, mm-hmm. they're still very similar in a lot of ways. And so I'd come across these people, and it encouraged, like I wanted something for them. And a lot of times when I was talking to them about their experiences, we'd go to film. We'd talk about a movie. And we'd watch a movie together, and I'd say, you know, it's kind of like this.
Mm-hmm.
But there never really was a film that really captured, even though, you know, we watched and watched and watched hundreds of films, there really never really was a film that really captured what it's like to leave a group and what it's like to kind of get reoriented back into society.
Now, when you say a group, a lot of people, when they think of, you know, religious fundamentalist groups, they think of, some strangely dressed people on a compound somewhere,
uh-huh.
that's, you know, sort of not part of society. But actually, many of the groups are very much intermingled with society.
Very,
right?
Very much so. A lot of these groups are, gosh, a lot of these groups are really just a part of everyday life. I mean, there might be a church on a street corner, mm-hmm. or that you would see. But I think that a lot of these the groups all have things in common. One, they try to control people. They try to control information that people receive. They could try to control people's thoughts, their emotions, and they work really hard at doing that for the benefit of whoever the leader is. Generally, the leader's a narcissist who likes the sound of his or her own voice, mm-hmm. and has something to hide, and so they develop this very elaborate strategy to get people to, you know, follow them in hopes of, you know, attaining salvation or doing God's work or whatever, and a lot of them claim to speak for God. So in that way,
mm-hmm.
People get trapped in these things, and they, especially if someone's born and raised in these kinds of groups, they really don't have an understanding of the outside world unless they leave it. And then leaving it's really, you know, pretty difficult.
And that's really a lot of what the movie is about, isn't it? I mean, in fact, that the woman the lead character Esther is,
mm-hmm.
that she really doesn't have any other frame of reference almost.
Right.
The one line that I just thought was great from a preview that I saw was that the guy in the health food store was talking about how health food stores are the place where the sort of slacker hippies and religious fundamentalists come together in that one space.
Right. Well,
tell me about that line.
Well, it's interesting. I was at Sahara Mart in Bloomington, mm-hmm. Indiana,
yeah.
and I shop there all the time. And we actually shot at Sahara Mart. And I was there, and I'm walking through the aisles, and there's this woman dressed. I mean, she was probably German Baptist or Mennonite or something, and she's got the cap and she's got all of it, and obviously very conservative. And she's shopping in the aisle, and a man walks up to her, and the man is, you know, he's got dreads, he's got tats, he's got all mm-hmm. his piercings all over, and I mean, obviously very, you know, kind of that hippie slacker,
sure.
grunge, whatever. And so and she asks him, do you know where this item is? Mm-hmm. I don't even remember what the item was. Do you know where this is? And he goes, oh yeah, it's right over here. And he grabs it off the shelf, and he didn't work there.
Yeah.
He grabs it off the shelf, and he hands it to her, and she goes, thanks. And he goes, you're welcome. And then they just walk, and I thought, nowhere else in America would mm-hmm. that transaction take place, except for in a health food store.
And it's because of the food, which is,
right.
I mean, to me, this is actually, that's kind of an exciting, encouraging thing.
Right.
In a way, I mean, you know, and here we are in Indianapolis, and in fact, just recently, we had the Spirit in Place Festival this year, which brings together many different different organizations, and this year's whole theme is on how food connects us. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of one of the most fascinating things I thought about your film, is that, you know, it is sort of, you know, the food is this common place where, you know, people meet and where ideas can be exchanged or changed, in fact.
Right. I mean, I think the message of this film for me has been, you know, can we all just kind of turn down the outrage a little bit and see there are things that are abusive, mm-hmm. absolutely abusive, and I think we can all kind of look at that. But in reality, we're not that far apart. We all eat.
Right,
We all eat. Everybody mm-hmm. eats. And so, well, go ahead, Storm.
Well, I was just going to say, and we're all concerned about, you know, we're all concerned about the same kinds of things, you know, that even in the political climate, you know, whether you're on one side or the other, you know, people are concerned about whether or not they're going to have a job, whether or not they're going to be able to pay their bills. Both sides are concerned about, you know, we're all human.
Sure.
We're all struggling with the same things.
Storm, let me ask you this. I want to talk a bit about the production of it. Most of it was, or a lot of it was shot in southern Indiana. I know some also shot in Texas, I believe. And you know, tell me about, you know, when that was happening and sort of now how, you know, you're on this independent film circuit, you know, with, of course, you know, here with Heartland Film, but also some other film festivals coming up.
Well, we shot, you know, Andy met me in Austin. I was living in Austin at the time that we shot this, and I'd lived there for about 15 years till about a year ago. But we shot, we got most of the crew from Austin and most of the cast from Austin. And in July of, what, is that of 2009, Andy?
I don't know. The past 2 years have been a blur, Storm.
Well, I'm just not good with the numbers.
You're right.
But,
I think
we shot it in the summer before this last summer.
Yes.
We shot for the first 6 days of our shooting schedule in Austin. We took 3 days off, and on those 3 days we drove, me and Andy and two of the other producers drove in a minivan to Indiana.
My minivan.
And the rest
bomb.
Of the people flew up and met us, and then we shot for 11 shooting days. And so we were in Bloomington for mm-hmm. about close to 2 weeks shooting up there. So
very cool. So this is in many ways an Indiana film, mm-hmm. which is great.
We like to say we have dual citizenship.
Dual citizenship, right. Right, both Texas and Indiana.
That's right.
So tell me about the experience at Heartland for you guys.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Heartland is an amazing film festival. Mm-hmm. The caliber of filmmakers that come there, the people, I mean, you see people that are up and coming, you see people that are really established. Everybody helps everybody else. Everybody works together. Jeff Sparks, the CEO there, is amazing. He's funny. He's very personable and just a joy to be around. And Ray Mills, who's our programming coordinator, is just very helpful. You know, we've gotten a lot of contacts from people just, you know, willing to help us out. Oh, you should try this film festival, or, oh, I know of somebody here that can help you. So it's a very collaborative kind of atmosphere. And it's just really, I mean, it's just really world class. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, a lot of people who came to our film came because, you know, of us, and they'd never been mm-hmm. a part of Heartland before. And so it was great for me, because I've been coming to Heartland Film since I was in high school. It was great for me to introduce them to that and say, yeah, we really do have great art here in Indiana.
Yeah.
Like, check this out. Like, this is really good stuff. But there were a lot of really great short films. There were a lot of great features. There was just a lot of, it was really fun. We really had a great time.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, something that struck me about Heartland just is the audience there is great. The community is really coming out, whereas at some other festivals you get people who are just filmmakers or just, you know, they're already in this mix of the film world and they're interested, mm-hmm. so they come out. But I think at Heartland you really have the participation of, like, this large group of people that are just, they're just film fans. They're yeah. not, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like the community really comes out as opposed to just this small group of
That's
people
great to
who
hear.
Are immersed in film.
And not only do they come out to watch the films, but they volunteer. I mean, there are over 500 volunteers that help Heartland pull that off, mm-hmm. from people driving, you know, driving us around, to people serving food, to people doing, you know, making sure that every, you know, all of your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed. I mean, they're really amazing, and they're all volunteers, and everybody's, I mean, it's really great. We had a great time, and we had gone to the gala the year before, and we sat at a table with some really interesting people, and I remember saying to Storm then, like, what if,
mm-hmm.
you know, what if we get to do
how
this?
Cool would
that
this
would
be?
That would be really cool. We were in the editing process at that point, and I think slogging through, you mm-hmm. know, 40 hours of footage. And
it really was our dream, you know, in many ways to have our premiere at Heartland. And so
that's excellent. Really, well, congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
Now you guys have a Los Angeles premiere, right? Coming up soon. Tell me a bit about this.
We do. LA Talk Radio has a show called Film Courage with David Brandon and Karen Warden. And they, you know, basically interview a lot of scrappy young filmmakers who are out there making movies. And, every month they select a different film to show, and they selected Paradise. So
great.
It's kind of a monthly film festival kind of atmosphere. And they showed at the Downtown Independent, which is really great, a great theater, a great venue. So it's a state-of-the-art kind of...
So is the hope, I mean, having it in L.A., I mean, that's a great showcase, obviously, as well as Heartland, that, you know, you get a major distributor picking this up.
That would be awesome. And we're all about distributing Paradise Recovered. But, we made a lot of contacts at Heartland that plan mm-hmm. to come to our L.A. screening and plan to bring people that they know. So
that's really
it's
cool.
exciting. I mean, Heartland was really a great launch for us. I mean, Austin Film Festival as well.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them overlapped. So it was kind of fun, like, you know, finish up Heartland, get on a plane, go to dual citizenship. Exactly, dual citizenship. We meet all these great people, and they're like, oh, yeah, we live in L.A. Oh, we're going to come to that. Oh, I know somebody.
Cool.
I know somebody would be really interested in this. So it's been interesting we're starting to get calls from, distribution companies and producers
right.
reps and things like that. So we're,
Let me ask you about the music that you used.
I love the music in our movie.
Well, in fact, I heard about the movie first because of the music. So,
Kara Wallers mm-hmm. And Grover Perido are the composers for our film. So they did a lot of score, but then there's a couple.
And they were on Art of the Matter just a couple months ago talking about their CD.
They're
very cool stuff. Yeah,
Good Night Charlotte's a great, great album. And they wrote a song for Paradise. We also used Musical Family Tree and helping us find some great 90s era music for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
El Nino is one of the bands I'm thinking of. Sardina,
kind
of Bloomington era, time, kind of my time.
Is Bloomington identified in the movie?
We don't identify Bloomington
okay.
in the movie.
Okay.
But
if you know it,
you know it, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
But no, we don't identify it in the movie. And then we also picked up a couple of really great Bloomington area bands. One
mm-hmm.
is Salam, which is
Middle
Eastern.
Oh, yeah. Know
Eastern.
Them well. They're
yeah,
fantastic.
They're great. And so and it was really funny. Salam, that's a really good, that's a fun story. Storm came to me and said, we need some background music for,
mm-hmm.
Sahara Mart that we can play. And I said, what are you looking for? And he says, well, I'm looking for some like Middle Eastern New Age music. And
right.
I'm like, really? That's
because we got a band down the street.
Because that's not a niche or anything, right?
And they're from Bloomington.
And what was great was I start to email the contact and her email pops up as if I've emailed her before.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out Dina
uh-huh.
Is the mom of one of the boys on my son's soccer team. And then she's been to my house. And I'm like, Dina, I have something to talk to you about that's not soccer. So yeah, it was really, they were very gracious in sharing their music with us. And then also there's a band called the New Old Cavalry,
okay.
which is a really cool bluegrass kind of funk band, if you can imagine, such a hybrid, but they're real a great band, and they're they live in Bloomington, Little Nashville. So,
hey Storm, as we're wrapping this up, let me ask you this: what was your just favorite part about making this movie?
My favorite part of making the movie, making a movie is it's great. Each day you work really long hours. And my favorite part is coming together with this group of people that were strangers, really, until you start. Me and Andy weren't strangers, but, for the most part, the cast and the crew, we didn't know each other very well. And you come together for 3 weeks, and, you collaborate on this to tell this story, and everybody brings, their talent to the table, and in the end, you've made this this, you know, what turned out to be this, I think, really beautiful film. And it's only because, you know, all these people came together and lent, you know, their talents, and they all did such a wonderful job. And to be able to provide that environment, you know, that Andy was able to write the script and give me a chance to, you know, come in and help, you know, coordinate and communicate and, you know, have ideas for this. I guess my favorite part is that collaborative effort and what it, you know, what it gave us, this wonderful film, which, you know, so I love that whole process. And I guess that's a big thing, but that is my favorite part of it, is the what came out of that working together.
Andy, last words for you as we wrap this up?
I'm just really excited about this movie. I can't even believe that somebody sat at her kitchen table and wrote a film with four kids underfoot. I mean, it really is a dream come true. This has been an amazing experience for both Storm and I, but also it's been really fun empowering a lot of different artists and bringing a lot of different people in, and everybody brought their A game. Absolutely, from our producers to our PAs to everybody, you know, everybody involved, especially our wonderful actors, and we have an incredible cast. It's been pretty magical.
Travis DiNicola with Andy Redwine and Storm Wood. Redwine is the writer and producer of the new movie Paradise Recovered. Wood is the director and producer. You can get more information about the movie on their website, ParadiseRecovered.com. Again, ParadiseRecovered.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4. We'll start our whole holiday season preview with I get to meet the IRT's new Scrooge just in time for a Christmas carol.
I get to take a trip on the jingle rails at the Idle Jork.
And I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis School Ballet's Nutcracker. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.